Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution
of
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Live we are. It's the Thursday night hour of truth. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, and I'm Dave. We're going to dispense with the usual routine tonight. Usually we would go right into the National Minute, do a little Obama or Claire McCaskill bashing, but we're going to skip that. We have Mike Moon with us tonight. Mike's one of my favorite guys. I've met him a couple of times at different functions and intend to meet him a couple more times before the election. How you doing tonight, Mike?
Well, Dave, I'm doing really well, and I didn't expect you to say that because, man, you're flattering me to no end. Thank you.
No, no worries. I meant every word of it, and I sure appreciate you being here more than you know. We are going to push the Hour of Truth National Minute to a little bit later. I've got plenty of stuff there to talk about in the Obama and McCaskill bashing, so I want to tell the listeners Mike is gracious enough to give us time while he is multitasking and doing another event. Mike, you let us know when you need to go, and if you want to go and come back, that's fine. I'll do my thing in between. So you just let me know how you need to work this, and we'll get you taken care of too, okay?
Well, thank you very much. I think I'm okay for a little bit. We're trying to just work the crowds in between the sessions, so we'll take as much time as you need, and then we'll do what we need to do afterwards.
Okay, I know you're busy. You're somewhere every night, and like tonight, frequently two or three places a day. How does it feel out there, Mike?
Well, we're finding pretty good support. As long as we can meet people face-to-face, we're doing really well. And that's our biggest hurdle, though. We're working against the clock now, and we need to meet as many folks as we possibly can. So we're taking as much daylight as we can possibly squeeze into a day, and just try to meet as many folks as we can. But the people we meet face-to-face are supportive, so that's encouraging.
It is. It is. That's great to hear. I know that the schedule you're keeping is really, really difficult, and just to get to the and listen, folks, I'm going to do things again different tonight because I'm going to throw out the usual format, which has the kind of introduction, how you doing, Mike, stuff at the end. And we're going to get that at the first here because, as I said, Mike may come and go on us. How's the family? How's the family dealing? I know you're the kind of guy who would rather be spending the night at home watching a little TV or at the kids' baseball game. How's that holding up for you?
Doing well. We have four of our children who are old enough to take care for themselves. And my youngest son, Jason, will soon be 10, and he was with us on Tuesday. And we had some older siblings at home, and he decided to stay home tonight, and that's okay. But my wife, Denise, bless her heart, she's been batting 1,000 this time around. She hasn't missed an event yet, and she's with me. She's in another room helping out. And so I've been blessed, and
great.
So everything's working out pretty well.
Great. I know you don't remember me. I was just a face in the crowd, but I met you first time when you came to Springfield at the Greene
County
Courthouse.
Yeah,
and,
I remember you.
And I met I think you had your whole family with you then. What a delightful group of people, Mike.
Yeah, we had a good bunch. I remember you because it was on December 16th at the Greene County Courthouse, and you walked up, and you were the only one to ask a question, so I can't forget you.
Okay. I was deep in the Cain campaign at that time, you and I share a passion for the fair tax.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about that. Okay, we can't talk about someone who would like us to hire them to go to Washington, D.C. without starting off with the burr in everyone's saddle, and that's Obamacare and the Supreme Court ruling that has gotten us to a point today where we're in real trouble.
What a disappointment. You know, we had a Congress who said they were going to repeal it. Now, let me back up just a little bit, because we have some in our state legislation who say they're, or state delegation, who are going to say they want to repeal and not stop there. They want to replace it.
Right.
Well, my opinion is the government, the federal government, has no place in providing health care. And that's the bottom line for me. They should repeal it, and that's it. And then leave it. If the states want to get involved, it's their decision. But federally, there's nothing in the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, that gives the federal government the authority to do that. And that's the bottom line for me.
And we're talking there at that bottom line for you, even about Medicare and Medicaid and things for just the very, very destitute.
Yeah.
That should be at
That's
the state
right.
level. So you and I are in agreement that there really is no correlation between bad Romney, because he did this in Massachusetts, and Obamacare.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was a bad idea in Massachusetts, just like I think it's a bad idea if they do it in Louisiana. But just the same, it was a states' rights issue at that time, and there is no correlation between what he did there and what Obama is trying to do at a federal level.
There would be one conclusion that I would draw, because Mr. Romney did that in Massachusetts, is that he may have an affinity for it, which I would say he probably does, and he may want to continue it, as much as I would hope he doesn't want to do that. I'd like to see him do something totally different. But if he is our next president, I hope he'll take measures to repeal it, and to abolish it altogether.
I agree with you, and I hate to say this, and I actually put this in writing once in a blog, and I'm kind of sorry I did, because I don't ever want us to get to a point of complacency or taking anything for granted, but it is my opinion that the margin of victory is going to be so immense that he's got a mandate he can't back down from.
I would hope so. We can only hope so.
Okay. So let's go ahead and go from Obamacare to the bigger picture that kind of envelops Obamacare, and that is, what can you do in Washington, D.C., and I'm talking corporately, with enough people? Let's assume that along with you, we send enough people up there to actually turn the tide. What can we do? We're looking at a Supreme Court now that has made the federal government's power virtually unlimited with this really disappointing ruling. What can we do to roll that back? How do we handle that?
Well, I was pretty hopeful that because of what Justice Roberts did in declaring this a tax, that there might be an open window there, that we could go back to the introduction of the bill, H.R. 3590, because when it was introduced, it had nothing to do with tax revenue. And when it went to the Senate, we had Harry Reid and a few other senators take a hold of it, and they actually gutted the entire bill.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't rename it, and I'm not sure exactly how they got away with that. But anyway, that's where they introduced the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And so when they sent it back to the House, and then it was approved and passed, I think that's where I thought that's where there would be an open door, because the Constitution says, I believe it was Article 1, Section 7. I could be
exactly right.
Off on that.
Nope, you're right.
Okay. That's where it says that all revenue bills must originate in the House of Representatives.
Right.
And so when we thought about that, I thought, well, man, maybe Justice Roberts was a genius after all. And he knew that there wouldn't be a way that they would overwhelmingly vote against it as a interstate commerce situation. so he takes the initiative to pass it as a tax, and that's brilliant. But maybe it's not. I don't know. But in any case, I'm not sure if there's an attorney who would pick that up. We would hope they would. But if we could push that through to say let's take it back and let's just analyze this thing from the beginning and determine that it really was a tax, that it is a tax, since the Supreme Court ruled it so. Well, we could peel back all the layers and say, well, wait just a minute. It didn't start as a revenue bill, and so therefore it's unconstitutional.
That's exactly right.
So maybe there's some hope there, but short of that, we would hope that there was a Congress who has the guts enough to defund it. And then if that doesn't work, we still have hope that the states will stand against it. And that therein lies a real problem for the states, because here in Missouri, we don't have an attorney general who has the courage to contest it. So we have an election coming up on August 7th. We can nominate an attorney general who has the courage to do that. And I think we've got some running who are constitutionally minded. They know where their authority is, and if they do what they say, they'll contest this bill, which is now a law.
I agree with you, and unlike almost every other Republican primary going on in the state, I really I'm torn on the attorney general thing. I think both of these guys are really sharp and would do us very well.
Uh-huh.
I came out of the very first day very disappointed in Justice Roberts, but thinking exactly the way you did, and in fact, this thing that passed was a Senate bill, SB 365. I forget, but I was a little bit disappointed when I presented that scenario on the air to Bill Randles, who's a very, very sharp constitutional anti-big government attorney, and to Adam Warren, who's exactly the same thing. Both of them thought that there just wasn't much air under those wings.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Okay, I'm going to lump three things together here, debt ceiling, okay. NDAA, and the Patriot Act, and we're going to talk about Billy Long in respect to those three things and how those three things are devastatingly horrible ideas, in my opinion, and what's up with Billy.
Oh, my goodness. Where should we begin? Let's just take the debt ceiling. Well, you lumped them all together, so let's just take them in one lump, like you said.
Okay.
That really stuck in my craw. When he campaigned for a couple of years saying that you can't borrow your way out of debt, and then he voted to increase the debt ceiling, I mean, what's this guy thinking? That nobody's going to pay attention, that our memories are so short that we don't remember what he promised? And then the NDAA, which, you know, I have an analogy. It may not be the best one to talk about the NDAA and the Patriot Act and some of these other bills that they're passing. They have a lot of good things in them, like the NDAA, to continue funding of the military. And we need a military, I believe.
Essential, yeah.
There are good things in it, and that's what I consider the flour and the oil and the eggs and the cocoa if you're going to make some brownies. And then you mix all that up, and then someone goes out and they say, well, you know what, I'm going to just take a handful of dog poop and mix in with it too. And it's just a small amount.
Yeah.
Well, they mix it all up and they bake it. It looks like brownies. It may even smell like brownies. But if someone knew what was in it, you wouldn't get them to eat it. And that's what clauses or subclauses 1021 and 1022 are, where you've got the covered persons, which Senator Sessions said on the Senate floor that it does include American citizens, and they can be detained indefinitely without being charged. That's a violation of your Fourth Amendment. They don't have a right to an attorney, which is a violation of the Fifth Amendment, and then they don't have a right to a trial, which is a violation of the Sixth Amendment. And you think, well, there's dog poop in that. It makes the whole thing bad. But yet our current representative voted for it. And then the Patriot Act. There were a lot of good things in that. However, when they take away the provision that requires the law officials and authorities to get a warrant to search a person and their papers. Well, that's in violation of the Fourth Amendment, and that shouldn't be. So the whole thing's bad as a result.
So Mike, tell me. I know you've studied this system a lot more than I have and how it works. What happens when a guy stands up here with all the best intentions of the world and says, this is what the Constitution says, this is what I want to represent you at? What happens when he gets to Washington, D.C., that so quickly he's turned into just another one of the good old boys?
You mean what happens to the person once that happens? Or
yeah, I mean, what is the process that causes this to happen to a person?
Well, Billy said it when he came back. He said it on several occasions that you don't understand the pressure that's there. Well, perhaps we don't, but that's what we send a representative for, to stand up against the pressure. And if he can't take it, then he needs to come home.
Yeah.
And whoever is there needs to understand that, yeah, there are going to be people telling you this is the way it's done, and you walk or toe the line or else. Well, that's part of the process. And you better be willing, and I better be willing and able to say, okay, here's what I stand on. It's constitutional principles. And then that's what has to guide every single vote, every single debate, and every conversation that I have. And, Dave, I can't tell you that I understand everything that goes on behind the doors, because I don't. But I just know that until we have men who stand on solid principles to go there and to do the work that we've asked them to do, it's not going to change. And one of the things that I've asked folks to do is to hold me accountable. Now, that's cliche, I know. We talk about that all the time. But I've got some men and some women that I've been working with, and I'm pleading with them and causing them to pledge to me that they will do that very thing. And unless we have some accountability back in the district and perhaps even in Washington as well, it's going to be extremely difficult. And so everything I do, I hope to make it public. Justin Amash or Jason Amash, a representative in Congress, list on Facebook every vote that he casts and why he votes the way he does. And I hope to follow his example, because I think that's a great thing. And if someone says, hey, you voted against this or for this, I say, well, this is the reason. And there should be a long trail where there's an accountability there.
I agree 100%. And I'm going to juggle the schedule here a little bit. And I'm going to say that what's going to happen to you, Mike, is when you get to Washington, D.C., and you've been there about 24 hours, someone from the Speaker's office is going to come in, and they're going to start talking to you immediately about 2 years from now when you run for your second term, and they're going to hold out all the money that you need to do what Billy's doing right now. And they're going to say that all you got to do for all this backing when it's time for your second term is do this and this and this. And we know that's where we're at now. So what I want you to do right now, we have probably as many listeners online as we're going to get, is tell us where to find you on the web. And we're going to do this again before we finish, but I want you to tell us right now where to find you on the web and where to go to give you money, because we're certainly not going to win this by outspending Billy Long.
That's true. And that's why we're working hard on the ground. But you can find me at MikeMoonForCongress.com or at New Moon Over Washington on Facebook. And if you email me a question or message me on Facebook or even call the number that listed, it's 751-0243, and that's the 4187 exchange. So 417-751-0243. Or Mike Moon for Congress, or New Moon Over Washington on Facebook. I'd be happy to get back in touch with you.
And I can tell you, folks, right now, that I have conversed with Mike several times through Facebook and through his website, and he means what he says. He's always back to me personally within 48 hours at least, and I think almost every time within 24. We did try. I want everyone to know this, and this is the first time I've mentioned this. We tried. Missouri Grassroots Coalition tried desperately to set up three debates, one in Springfield, one in Joplin, and one down south. And Billy Long's people would not come along. And I'm sure you're running into that all over. I'm sure you guys have not seen nor come anywhere near each other since this thing started. Am I right?
The closest that I've been to him during the campaign was at Pierce City at the Congressional Delegate Convention. I believe that was April 21st or something like that. And we missed each other by a little bit. But, no, I haven't seen him. And I don't know that he really wants to see me, but I'd be happy to talk to him and be nice to be able to get him on a stage and talk it out.
I would love to have that happen. And I had told Mike at the very first that we're going to have these debates, whether Billy comes along or not, and that we're just going to put an empty chair up there, and we'll ask the questions, and Mike could answer them, and we'll make sure that we... But, you know, what I ran into was the realities of that situation, and that was without Long there, I couldn't get any press. I couldn't get any kind of media or publicity for these things at all.
Yeah.
And that's sad. That really is sad. Yeah. So, that said, I want to. We're going to take a quick break now. If you need to go for a while, Mike, just do so. And I'm going to leave your mic open if you need to leave. And so you just chip in when you get back, so that I'll know you're back. I don't have a call screener tonight. She's taking the night off to go to a Tea Party meeting out St. Louis way, So I'll just leave your mic open, and if you need to go, you just chip in when you get back. But before the break, I want to remind everyone of something now while Mike's here that I have said every night since we started this run-up to the primary, and that is patriots, that is Tea Party people, that is constitutionalists, your election is August 7th. This is where, I mean, when we get to November, it's a no-brainer for us. I mean, we don't like, there's a bad taste in our mouth about Mitt Romney. It's a no-brainer for us. When we get to November, it doesn't matter what's going on, who's running against Claire McCaskill. It's a no-brainer for us. So it is the August 7th primary where you folks decide, are we going to have a constitutional conservative, or are we going to have a rhino establishment Republican? And this is the guy right here that you want to look into, Mike Moon. And the other thing that I've said every night is that I think it is the opinion of Dave Court that the Tea Party as a movement, and when I say Tea Party as a movement, I'm talking about all you property rights groups, all you Tea Party groups, all you 912 groups, all you fair tax groups, as a movement, as a group of small government constitutionalists, we will see a pass-fail mark at this election. Last, we stunned them all when we sent a bunch of Tea Party labeled Republicans to take over the House, and we told those people when we sent them there, people like Billy Long, we told them when we sent them there, here's what we're sending you for, and if you don't do this, we'll call you back home just as fast as we sent you there, and we'll send up somebody that will. And if we don't keep our word on that, we failed. We have failed, and this movement might as well splinter and go its separate ways. If we hold this to it, if we hold them to this, then we have a chance of success. We have a chance of setting up a legislative body that is representative of us and our Constitution, maybe not totally this time. But if we keep our word, if we keep this tide turning and this wave rolling, and we stay on top of this wave, we've got a chance. So this election is pass or fail for us, and our election, brothers and sisters, is on August the 7th. With that, yep, we're going to take a quick break. I'm with Mike Moon. He's trying to bring Billy Long home, and we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back. Mike, if you're not here when we come back, then I'll just wait. I'll go into my thing, and I'll wait for you to come back. I know you've got a crowd to work there, so you do what you need to do.
free market capitalist Missouri business owners? Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, the voice of liberty in the bellwether state. This is the Hour of Truth. It's Thursday night. I'm Dave, and we're here with Mike Moon. Mike is you're in the seventh. We're in the seventh, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Mike is running to go to Washington, D.C. For the 7th House seat. That is the seat currently held by Billy Long, who promised us 2 years ago that he was fed up. He promised us that he was going up there to represent us Tea Party people and what we wanted. He said all the right things. He did all the right things. He got a lot of votes, including mine, embarrassingly so. And now it's time to keep our word and bring him home. Okay, Mike. Dear to my heart, and I know dear to yours, is doing something about the tax structure and tax fairness in this country. Where are you at on that?
Yeah. Well, you know that I'm a fair tax opponent and a supporter, and I really think that's the way to go. The more that I look at it, and first of all, you have to consider the enormous code that we have today. There are different figures on how big it is or how large, but at least 50,000, 60,000, some say much bigger. But it is so oppressive on the people, the businesses, and individual citizens. And we're not getting any better by just adding to it. And there's so many loopholes that, you know, if you've got a good tax attorney or CPA, you can find a lot of ways not to pay the tax. So it's not something that is fair. And that's why I like the fair tax, because it is something that everybody will pay, even those who are crooks and all this black market money that's trading hands, or the drug market or whatever it is. There'll be transactions that they're making, buying new goods and services, and they'll pay a sales tax on it. There'll be no income tax, and therefore you get to keep 100% of your money. Now, who wouldn't want that?
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Dave.
No. Well, go ahead. I was just agreeing with you.
Okay, good. And then, on top of that, you determine exactly how much tax you pay based on the items you buy, because it only affects new goods and new services. Used items, no tax at all. And some people say, well, good grief. I don't make a lot of money, and these rich guys ought to be paying more tax. Well, here's the skinny on that. The people who have a lot of money, we call them rich, they're the ones buying the high-ticket items. And they're going to pay a lot more tax than someone who is not buying a lot of stuff. And then for those who we consider poor, there'll be what's called a prebate that they'll get. And I don't remember all the figures, but I think it's like if, say, a family with two kids is going to get back $300 or $400 a month to pay for essential items like food and basic personal items, essential things. And the more kids you have, the more or the larger your family, the bigger the prebate. And so it puts everybody on a level playing field, the rich and the poor. And so that's really the real nice thing about the fairness of it. Everybody's going to pay tax based on what they purchase, and then it's pretty transparent, because you'll know exactly how much tax you're paying when you go to the store and you get your receipt. It'll have it listed right there, so you know exactly what's going to the federal government. And it's pretty simple, because you know, new goods, new services. And the tax would be collected, of course, at the different businesses, the retail outlets. And there'll be some forms, of course, they'll have to complete and send the money to the federal government. But The thing I like probably about the fare tax more than anything else is
I've totally lost you, Mike. I think your cell is breaking up wherever it is you're at.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, nope, there you are. You're back now. You're back now. I've got you now.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, I'm not sure exactly where else to go there. I found it kind of come to, to an end there. But if you have a particular question about it,
I don't.
I'll try to answer.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I have several questions, and I want to chip in, chirp in, I guess, and agree with you with everything that you've said. We have a fare tax show here, and we've gone into this quite a bit, and it's important for people to understand, because I don't know if your fans who are listening to us tonight, I know they've listened to you a lot, so they get it, but I don't know if they've heard me say my two favorite points, and that is a little bit of clarification there on this prebate. You're getting $400 back. Just to use the same number Mike did, if you do the math, now we're not paying you to buy bread. We're giving you a prebate to pay to return to you the tax that you pay. So
if you
get $400, you pay no tax. If we figure 26%, which is kind of where we're at to stay revenue neutral, you are not paying any tax until you spent $2,200.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we've given that tax back to you before you ever spent it. So the other thing is that the beauty, Mike, of the fare tax to me and the absolute necessity of it, the reason we've got to get this thing done is that we hear guys say, especially guys that are running for president, like it was in their power to ever do it anyway, when I get to Washington, the first thing I'm going to do is cut $1 trillion off of federal spending. Well,
sure.
Well, you know, you can't cut $1 trillion off federal spending because we become so dependent on that until such time that you have the private sector growing at the same rate you're shrinking the public sector. Because when you cut if you just walked into Washington tomorrow and cut $1 trillion, you'd put 1 million more people out of work.
Yeah.
And that would be, that, I mean, as badly as we hate government spending, that would be an absolute world-ending disaster. So the beauty of the fare tax is it explodes the private sector. And once we get that private sector growing, and not until we get that private sector growing, can we start reducing the public sector. So, you and I are fare tax lovers, I see. Now, what's the silver bullet now? And there's a lot of, you know, the current tax code is good for lobbyists and politicians. So what's the silver bullet that gets this done for us, Mike?
Well, you know what? It hadn't seen the light of day in the House or the Senate. And so I believe there's a lot of education that we have to do to people locally. We've had some efforts pushing the fare tax in Missouri, and it seemed like it was held up in the Senate. They didn't want to take it anywhere. And I believe that we need to just get people to understand it a little bit more. And I think the beauty of it is, once again, is that people get to keep 100% of their money, and they can use it any way they wish. And you know, now that's from a constituent standpoint, but I believe that's what is going to drive a lot of it, because we have to really force our representatives and our senators to pick up the ball and run with it. In the legislature, I've been taking a little bit of a look. You mentioned Herman Cain earlier.
Right.
And he has got what's called a 999 plan.
Right.
Out as a bridge to the fare tax.
Exactly.
And hopefully that will be something that we can get to gain some momentum as well. He's got a lot of people who have signed on to that. And if we get enough people elected, then that could be a catalyst that will just be a bridge that will end with the fare tax at some point down the road.
Right. And the beauty, I thought, during the campaign, when I was working so hard on 999, the beauty of I think I asked you at the Greene County Courthouse if you'd heard of 999 yet, and the beauty of 999 in my book, one of the many beauties of it as a bridge to the fare tax, is that that aside from that group of progressive politicians who think we need to keep the income tax so we can eat the rich, our biggest fair tax holdback on the conservative side of the aisle is the flat tax group. And 999 brings those two groups together and actually lets us bring those people into the fold as a bridge to the fair tax. And I think that's some wings that you can put some wind under if we can ever get it rolling. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's enough there for that, but the fair taxes. So what are as far as educating the public, Mike, what in your mind are, as I said, we have a fair tax night here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. So what in your mind are the one or two most significant things about fair tax that we need to educate people about to make them want? I mean, I'm so convinced more every week, every month, that if we could get the word out on this and get it out right, that this thing would go. I mean, progressives would love it, poor people would love it, rich people would love it. I think this thing would fly. But what's the one or two things we've got to educate people on and get out there to make them want this thing?
Well, this is kind of tongue in cheek, but I think it's turn the television off.
Yeah.
start paying attention. I talk to people just about common everyday things, and you get stares with big saucer eyes, and you wonder where have you been. And so I think a lot of it is just informing people because they're not aware, and so that's probably one of the places to start, to just start telling people about it, and as they are encouraged and enthused about it, to continue spreading the word, and hopefully there'll be some exponential results.
Yeah, I agree, and I think when I go out and talk to people, to groups of people about the fair tax, are you still there? Because I can't hear you anymore.
I'm here. I hear some static.
I do too. When I talk to groups of people about the fair tax, the questions that I keep getting, and I think we need to. I'm going to make a chart. I'm going to make a chart to take along with me, because I think we need to just do the math. Because the first thing people say is, "Well, this lady doesn't pay any tax right now with her single mother three kid status," yeah. And so we need to just do the math on what this prebate does and what kind of buying power you have with that compared, and marry that up with the fact that if you work 40 hours a week for $10 an hour, you bring home $400.
Yeah.
I think that's one education aspect that really needs to be moved.
Yeah, that could certainly be an eye opener for a lot of folks, and I believe you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Why are you doing this, Mike? I mean, you're a successful you're a successful guy with a nice, comfortable family back home who's made it in life. Why do you want to take this headache on?
Well, it goes back to my family, actually. When I realized what our country is doing and where it's headed, I'm only 53 years old. I'm not that old. I've still got a long time to live. But my kids, they're just getting started. And we've made, I say our government has made decisions that are going to affect them that are just devastating. And I've got a burning within my gut that says unless someone takes a stand and requires our government to turn back the tide and to stop spending and putting in regulations and all these kind of things that are just driving us in the ground, we're not going to get any better. And so I've been studying hard the last few years, and I believe that I've got the right ideas. Because when I talk to people, they're supporting. And I don't know everything there is to know. I've got a lot to learn, and I'm still learning. But I believe that we need to have someone in Washington, D.C., representing the 7th Congressional District, who will say, enough. Let's stop what we're doing. We've got to start abiding by the Constitution and start rolling back some of these bad laws and taxes and regulations that have been thrown upon us. We're the people. We delegate. Since we're a republic, we can delegate our authority to someone else. That's what we do it for, a representative. But they can't assume any more authority than we've given them.
Amen.
But we've allowed it to happen for hundreds of years, and it's got to stop. And until the people understand that, yeah, we have the authority to rein it in, because we are essentially the government, not going to happen. So we got to start somewhere.
That's right. And that is such an important point for people to remember. I want to dwell on that for just a second. We cannot delegate any more authority to a representative of our government. We cannot delegate to our government any more authority than we had to start with. So if I don't have the authority to go to my next door neighbor and take money from him to give it to the next door neighbor on the other side, then that is not a power I can delegate to Washington.
Exactly.
So, okay, and we're going to talk about one or two quick things here, because I know you've got a thing going. I want you to tell me how you come to where. First of all, tell me, I know you're a Republican. I know you're running on the Republican ticket. I know a lot of good libertarians. I'm a libertarian with a small L. I'm not a member of the party. And I think when movements become parties, then things go wrong very quickly. But tell me where you're at on the spectrum.
Well,
do you feel more libertarian in your soul than, say, hyper-conservative, or do you feel more really conservative?
Well, I'm absolutely a conservative, and I remember Ronald Reagan said something, and I can't quote it exactly, but he talked about how conservatism is libertarianism. And I wish I had the quote in front of me, because it was just perfect for those naysayers who say, well, you know, you're a libertarian, so you're off the deep end. But that's essentially, I think, where most of us who believe in property rights and who believe in free markets and all those things that make America what it is today really have a little bit of that in us anyway. And I guess the thing that I fall short of is that when it comes to personal rights, some people think that they can do anything they want to do without any consequences. Well, I'm a believer in that. I do have the freedom to do anything I want to do as long as it doesn't infringe upon someone else's personal rights. That's where I draw the line. And that's why we have laws, because there are responsibilities that we have, and there are consequences to pushing your freedom too far. And I don't want that to come off wrong, but it's just the fact that I can drive down the road, but I can't hit someone else's car just because I wanted to take the person's place or take that car's place. And that, again, that's probably not the best analogy to use, but hopefully you're tracking with me on that.
I am.
That, I believe in personal freedoms, and I believe in as little government as possible, because when the government is getting bigger, then our personal freedoms are diminishing. And so that's one of the things I want to see, is that our freedoms grow when the government gets a little smaller. And along with that comes less taxation, less regulation. One of the things that our founders, I believe, rightly declared through their writings were that the only reliable basis for sound government is in just human relations is natural law, and that's God's law. And of course, we're not perfect, but God handed down the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, and we've probably broken nearly all of them anyway, everybody breaks at least one of them. And I think it's in James 2:10 says that if you've broken one, it's as if you've broken them all. And so we're imperfect in that sense. But a free people cannot survive in a Republican Constitution like we have unless they remain virtuous and morally strong. And we're a far cry from that. And so I guess you can surmise that part of the breakdown we have in our country is because we're not really a morally and virtuous people. And I have to include myself in that group, too. I'm not perfect. Nobody is. But I think we need to return to the roots that our founding fathers laid for us, that foundation, and elect people who, again, they're not going to be perfect. I'm not a perfect man. But those who stand for moral principles and for sound, solid values, and I believe I'm that person. And again, I'm going to make mistakes, but I've got an accountability committee who, and I'm adding people to it all the time, and I encourage you, Dave, if you want to be part of it, you're in. All you have to do is say yes, and then if I make good decisions, I want to hear about it. If I make bad decisions, I want to hear about it. I need to. And I need to be man enough to say, if I made a mistake, that, yeah, I made a mistake. And it may not be justifiable, but at least admit that I've done wrong.
And that is one of the things that I've got to say, and probably the only thing, that I give to Congressman Long. You know, we've got another congressman running for a position who voted for the NDAA, who voted for the Patriot Act, who voted for the debt ceiling increase, who's out there now stumping that he didn't do those things. Whereas Congressman Long says, now he doesn't admit that he made any mistakes. He continues to justify all of those votes, but at least he fesses up to the fact that he did it.
Yeah.
And
that's good.
Yeah, the basis of conservatism is a desire for less government interference or less centralized authority or more individual freedom. And this is pretty general description of what libertarianism is. That's Reagan. You're sitting out in the hallway and you don't have Google at your fingertips, so I went and found that. One of the last things that I want to cover, and it gets deep down again into the soul of who Mike Moon is And I don't know the answer to this question. I pretty much knew the answer to every question I've asked you so far before you gave the answer, but I don't know the answer to this one. How were you raised, Mike? Did you have an awakening that brought you to where we are, or is this just something you've always been?
Okay, I want to hear your answer.
No. This is the only thing I've asked you, but I didn't know the answer.
I'm pulling your leg.
Okay.
I was raised by a family who I think they had good morals, but that's not all. We lived in a place in North Carolina. I was born in a place called Kannapolis, North Carolina. That's where Dale Earnhardt was born and raised. And so I have an affinity for NASCAR, not the funding of it or federal government funding, but, you know, I like to watch a few laps every now and then. I really like the wreck. That's kind of why I watch. My family, we were churchgoers, but it was more of a social type church going, as I recall. I didn't know it then, but I don't know if all of you can identify with this, but it's just as who I am and part of the story of what brought me here today. Back when I had finished first grade, it was about 65, I guess it was, 65 or 66. My dad took a job that took him from North Carolina up to Virginia, a place called Chesapeake, working for the Norfolk Naval Shipyards. And so our family migrated to Virginia, and mom and dad worked 6 days a week. They were hard workers, and I think that's where I get part of my work ethic from. But their rest day was Sunday. And it's kind of funny because I have two older sisters and two younger brothers. My two younger brothers were in diapers. And on Sundays, I don't know exactly how it started, but we had people from other churches come around. They would knock on the doors and say, hey, we've got a church bus. We can take your kids to church. Will you let us? And so mom and dad, they were resting on Sunday. So they said, sure, go ahead. So I can remember vividly us taking our two younger brothers. They were in diapers. Unfortunately, I was out of diapers as an 8 or 9 year old. But that's how we kind of got to church in Virginia. And we ended up at a Baptist church at a place called Portsmouth, Virginia, where we heard the gospel of Jesus Christ, and one by one, each of our families believed in what was being preached, and we each of us came to know and accept Jesus Christ as our Savior. And, you know, as I grew, I didn't know exactly what all that was about originally or initially, but I've continued to go to church and to study the Bible, and realized that the more I study, the more of an imperfect human I am. But we're all that way. We're all sinners, if you believe in what Scripture says. So I have a personal faith in Jesus Christ. Doesn't make me any better than anybody else. It's just what I believe, and that's what drives me. And we've taught our children to be first to love God, to love family, love country. And I believe we've done a fair job of that. And for those of you who know my children, I encourage you to ask them. Ask them what kind of guy I am, and hopefully they'll be honest and tell you. And if you have an opportunity to talk to my wife, ask her too. You have that freedom. I give you permission to do that. and if you know people I work with, ask them. Because if you ask me, you don't know if I'm going to tell you the truth, because I want to make myself look good. But I hope you'll pay attention and read about some of the things that I've written, and ask people questions who know me. I think that's where you'll know who the individual is. And so those types of things, as I've grown and worked, and I've had small businesses that I've done throughout the years, and some have been successful and some have failed. I've learned lots of things through those experiences. And I'm trying to teach my kids the same thing. And you probably know, as you've grown, Dave, that many times you really don't learn until you have that experience personally. And so my children are kind of going through those things now. You know, I remember when I was growing up, I knew everything. My parents didn't. And it took me probably till I was about 22 or 23, and I realized, you know what, Mom and Dad were right. And unfortunately, who sang the song that or made the statement that youth is wasted on the young? And you know, if we could know what we know now and still have the strength and the stamina and the energy and all that to do it again, man, we could turn the world upside down. But that's not the way God created us. We get older, we're wiser, hopefully, and hopefully don't make the same mistakes. And so anyway, we're trying to train our kids in a way that they will be smarter than we were. And I know they're going to make mistakes, but they have to make them. That's part of life. And so anyway, in a nutshell, that's kind of who I am and where I got to where I am.
Good, good. Thank you very much for that. I think that was really insightful for the people. We're gonna hang on to Mike for about 5 more minutes. So if you've got that question, get it into 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We're only going to keep Mike for about 5 more minutes, and then we're going to let him get back to what he's doing there on his end. And Mike said something about how we get older and we get wiser, and I want to tell you folks, go to his website and look. Look at the photo if you don't think I'm right, but I know I get older. I don't know how much wiser I get, but if I take you to a Mike Moon function and you say to me, who's Mike Moon, and I point to that guy over there, you're going to say, there's no way. That kid ain't 52 years old. Mike is – Mike, how do you look so young? Is it all that farming?
Well, I'm not actually 52.
Oh,
I'm 53.
53.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I have to give credit partly to my mom. She has some Cherokee Indian in her, and she just turned 76.
Whoa.
And she's still not fully gray. And I've got some gray, but it's coming in pretty slowly. So I guess it's just family genes.
Good. Now, just really quickly then, and I don't mean really quickly, you take all the time you want. I'm going to throw this mic over to you because there's some one or two or three things that you're out there stumping about every day that you know people are concerned about that I haven't hit on tonight. So you just take it from here for the rest of the time that you can spend with us, and you get into those things.
Okay. Well, we've covered several of them already where the things about, you know, what Billy has done. And there are some people who know it and a lot of people who don't. And so we're trying to hit on those things and just explain to them the dangers of allowing someone to continue in that place. And I guess lastly, some people say, well, what can one man do in Washington, D.C.? I mean, especially someone who's never been there and you may not know the ropes and things like that. Well, there's several stories that I have, but one that I think is pretty meaningful, I heard from a guy named Chuck Colson. You may remember him from being on Nixon's staff. He was
I did.
Chief counsel.
Yep.
And, you know, he did some pretty bad things.
Yep.
But he served his time in jail. And this may sound cliche, but he says, and I have to believe him because I didn't know him before, but anyway, he said that he came to know the Lord through his jail time. But he told a story about a guy named, I believe the name, the guy's name is Telemachus, and he was a 4th century Christian monk. And this guy lived in a remote village, tended his garden, and spent a lot of time praying. But one day he thought he heard the voice of God telling him to go to Rome. So, as a good monk, he obeyed, and he headed out on foot. Weeks later, he was tired, but he arrived in the city, and there was a great festival going on. And so this little guy followed the crowd that was surging down the streets into the Colosseum. He saw the gladiators there standing before the emperor, and he said, "Who are we about to die to salute you?" The gladiators were saying that. And they realized that these men were going to fight to the death for the entertainment of the crowd. And so Telemachus cried out, he said, "In the name of Christ, stop." Well, as the games began, he pushed his way through the crowd. He climbed over the wall. He dropped to the floor of the arena. And when the crowd saw this tiny figure rushing to the gladiators and saying, "In the name of Christ, stop," they thought it was part of the show. And so they began laughing at him. Well, they realized soon after that it wasn't part of the show, and their laughter turned to anger. And so Telemachus was, as he was pleading to the gladiators to stop, one of them plunged a sword into him, and he fell to the sand. And as he was dying, his last words were, "In the name of Christ, stop." And then something really strange happened. The gladiators stood looking at this tiny figure of a man lying there, dying, and a hush fell over the whole Colosseum. Way up in the upper rows, though, a man stood up, and he started making his way to the exit, and others began to follow. In a dead silence, everyone left the Colosseum. Now, it was the year, I believe, 391 A.D., and that was the last battle to the death between gladiators and the Roman Colosseum. Never again in that great stadium did men kill each other for the mere pleasure of the crowd. And it was all prompted by one tiny voice that could hardly be heard above the roar of the crowd, but it was one that spoke the truth. And, you know, that gives me chills, because that's what we need in Washington, D.C., someone who knows the Constitution well enough to say, "Wait just a minute, we've got to stop allowing the president to issue executive orders. We've got to stop allowing the administrative agencies to issue administrative rules." And they all carry the full force and effect of law. So if we break one of those, we can be fined or in prison. And I think of Article 1, Section 1. It states that all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States, which will consist of the Senate and the House of Representatives. And that clearly tells me that only the House or the Senate, the Congress, can make laws. Not the President, and not the courts, of course, and they've been doing it, and not the administrative executive agencies. And so we need someone to say, enough is enough. And I don't expect to die, of course, but it would be political suicide. I can understand that, but I'm willing to do it because, I'm 53, as I mentioned. I've worked 27 years in the same job, the current job that I hold now with the hospital. I've got a small amount of animals that hopefully will help me financially afterward, but I don't need a congressional pension. In fact, I've taken a pledge not to accept it. If I make it 5 years and invest it, I don't need a pension. I don't think the country can afford it, first of all. But that's something that I'm passionate about. And I think maybe if I can be a Telemachus and hold the principles that our country was founded on and just be that one small voice, maybe there'll be someone in the group of that 435 congressional representatives and maybe one a senator in that 100 will say, look at that guy from Southwest Missouri. Maybe he's doing the right thing after all. And maybe the country will notice, and maybe there'll be a big push to say, hey, let's get back to the Constitution, because it really is the right thing to do. But unless someone starts, it's not going to happen. So I hope to start that.
Well, that sends, I don't want to sound like the guy who had, tingles running up and down his leg when Obama talks, but that sounds like the kind of thing that should send chills up and down people's spine when you talk like that, Mike. And that's what we've said. You know, we've said from the very beginning, Missouri Grassroots Coalition came into existence back in December. A couple of us who were refugees from the Kane debacle, and what our goal was at that time was through the Randalls and the Mike Moons and the through the precinct committees to the state house to our representatives in Washington D.C. was because, as I say, we were all refugees from what happened to Herman Cain, and we made it our mission to do exactly what you've said here. And if I could cut that down to about 10 words, it is by getting back to the Constitution to make the President of the United States exactly what he should be, and that is irrelevant to our everyday life.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, you know, the guy should command the military, and he should sign treaties, and he should host dinner parties for foreign dignitaries, and he should be absolutely insignificant to what we do every day out in the streets of Missouri. Okay, Mike, yep. I want to have you one more time tell us your website, tell us your Facebook page, and tell us how to get in touch with you and what you need from us.
Great. Well, my name is Mike Moon. You can reach me at MikeMoonForCongress.com or at New Moon Over Washington on Facebook. And you can give me a call, too, if you like, at 417-751-0243. And, the hardest thing with a campaign is meeting enough people and getting the word out. And we're doing this by going to the communities and meeting as many people as we possibly can. And if you'd like to contribute money to help us with purchase of materials, and we do want to get out on the with some radio or television ads if we possibly can, and if you want to help with that, we'd love to have your support. You can go to the website, and there's a donate button there, or you can also send donations to Post Office Box 607, Springfield, Missouri 65801. That's Post Office Box 607, Springfield, Missouri 65801.
We don't, you know, we spend a lot of time saying thank you to our troops, and we spend a lot of time saying thank you to the people that we've labeled heroes in society, our firefighters and our first responders. I don't think we spend enough time, though, Mike, saying win or lose. Thank you to a guy like you who leaves his life behind, who strikes out on this mission to give us back something that we've lost so long ago that almost no one alive today remembers even what it is. And I want to thank you, and I know that all of our listeners want to extend their appreciation to you for what you are doing for us, Mike.
Well, thank you very much, Dave, and for the opportunity to be able to talk to you and just tell a little bit about why I'm running and some of the things that we need to do. I really appreciate your letting me do that.
Okay, well, I appreciate you. I'm looking forward to seeing you at least a couple more times when you're in and around this area, and keep up the good work, Mike. You've got the backing of the Hour of Truth, and I believe the majority of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, if not all. Whatever we can do for you, you know my Facebook page as well. So you get a hold of me anytime you need to, and whatever we can do for you here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, you let me know and we'll get her done. This is Mike Moon. Mike Moon, Missouri Congressional 7th. He's grassroots approved, and we thank him for being along. I'm Dave. This is the Hour of Truth. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and rail on the prez a little bit. Thank you.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We are turning the tide here at Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave, and what a fun hour that was. I mean, I could sit around, I'm telling you, and talk to that guy over coffee for 6 or 7 hours and never get tired of it. There is a guy who has spent some time studying what this is supposed to be and what is supposed to be going on here. You know, I would... If we were to have to start over again, if we were to have to send a group of people up to Philadelphia to say, okay, the system ain't working, let's start over again, write us a new document that we can use to start anew the way we did some time ago. This guy that we've been talking to tonight is one of the fellows I'd want to send along to that committee. He has studied it. He knows it. He feels liberty in his heart. And I want to tell you, folks, I'm a libertarian, and I'm not overly. I'm a man of faith. I'll tell you that right now. But I'm not overly into it the way some guys like Mike are. I wouldn't call myself a practicing born again Christian. Quite frankly, I believe I'm a born again Christian, but I want to say to those people on the left who continually rail that the way the right thinks is anything other than Christian, the way the small government people, don't tread on me people, don't steal money from Peter to give it to Paul people, are somewhat less than Christian. I want to say that nothing is more Christian, nothing, than free will. Christianity is the religion, is the spiritual essence that does not demand of human beings anything that they are not willing to give. Now, there are penalties for not giving it, but there are no demands. And that is the way, if you could say our government is a quote-unquote Christian nation, and I don't go down that road. I don't go down that road. I believe the Founding Fathers, specifically as Christian as they were, set us up as a secular nation. I am 100% libertarian. I don't believe that there's much difference between an ultra-conservative and an ultra-progressive, except that each one wants their own government. Neither wants smaller government. One wants to enforce their theology on you, and the other wants to enforce their virtual atheism on you. But if there is one thing about the United States of America that mirrors Christianity, it is that everything about liberty is about free will. It is about free will. It is about responsibility for your own decisions. And that's where it's at. So there is nothing unchristian about being a person who says that the money that goes to Paul isn't something I can steal from Peter, but it is something that I can give to Paul of my own free will. There is nothing that says that more than Christianity, that liberty is something that God gave us and that we answer to a higher being or a group or to ourselves for the decisions that we make. Then the civil society is built on that free will to keep my right of exercising my free will from stealing from you any of the liberties and rights that were endowed upon you. And one of those liberties and rights is your property. I don't get to steal corporately or individually your property. So leave me alone, lefties who say that there's something unchristian about personal responsibility, that there's something unchristian about exercising free will as a centerpiece of liberty and freedom. Speaking of that,
I'm going to reduce the deficit in a balanced way. We've already made $1 trillion worth of cuts. We can make another trillion or trillion two. And what we then do is ask for the wealthy to pay a little bit more.
This man is a chronic liar. This man is chronically evil. Did you hear him say that he had already cut $1 trillion from the federal budget as if there was a federal budget? Did you hear him say that he had already cut $1 trillion in spending? This is the guy who went out and borrowed $3 trillion 6 months ago, $3 trillion deficit dollars 3 months ago, so that he could spend $1.5 trillion more this year than he spent last year when he only borrowed $2 trillion. And he's cut spending by $1 trillion, and by golly, he's going to cut it by $1 trillion more. And since he's done these two great things, we'd ought to go out and we'd ought to ask rich people, those evil, evil rich people, to pay more money so that someone who didn't work for it could have life as good as the guy that did work for it that we're taking the money from. This guy is absolutely, unequivocally, chronically evil. I mean, he intends, it is his intention. None of this stuff is unintended consequence. None of the stuff that's coming down on you is unintended consequence. This is intended to destroy the United States. The man told you on Inauguration Day he was going to fundamentally change this country. That's a quote. We're going to fundamentally change the United States of America. Excuse me, please. And he is set about doing that. Listen. I'm preaching to the choir. You know this to be true. In the period of time from FDR, Woodrow Wilson even, to the time Barack Obama was elected president, we initiated food stamps, we initiated Medicaid, we initiated Medicare, we initiated Social Security, we initiated a ton more welfare programs, we initiated a state that used the gun of the tax code to force us into certain behaviors and to prohibit us from certain behaviors. In 3 years, we have borrowed another $9 trillion. We have vested on the President of the United States the power to seize an American citizen and detain him without trial, without recourse. We have further defined in writing an American citizen to include myself and yourself as potential domestic terrorists, as dangerous to the society, because we believe in things like smaller government. We believe in things like the Constitution. We believe in things like the First, Second, Third Amendment. We believe in personal responsibility. We believe in liberty. We may have a bumper sticker on our car that says something about smaller government, or that says something about we cling to our, what was it? We cling to our guns and religion. We're backward people who cling to our guns and religion. And there are documents, you can Google them up. I'll put them on, I'll post them on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. There are documents generated by the Department of Homeland Security that define you and I as potential domestic terrorists. Couple that with the right we have given the president and the military authorities to come down here and get us, potential domestic terrorists, and detain us indefinitely without recourse. Now, this is in 3 years. 3 years we've come here. In 3 years, we have drones flying over our houses. In three short years, we have come to that. In 3 short years, we have made a record number, we have crossed the tipping point. We have made a record number of people dependent on the government, a record number of voters dependent on the people that they put in power or don't put in power. Do you get what I'm saying here? In the same 3 years, we have tipped to a point where the federal government has been given by a lackadaisical Congress, by our own ignorance and apathy, and by the Supreme Court of the United States, virtually unlimited, unfettered power to do to our lives anything they want through the, call it the tax code, call it the whatever, call it the penalty code, call it whatever you want. But Justice Roberts and his cronies said, you can do that. You can go out here and you can do anything you want to these people. Just call it a tax. Just call it a tax. You can make them buy anything. Call it a tax. You can forbid them from buying anything. Call it a tax. We've got a guy who, I mean, you want to talk about some Soviet-style leadership. We have got a guy who took $500 billion. Now, this is kind of crony capitalism, has been going on forever. But nothing to the scale of the Soviet DACAs down on the Baltic Sea. Okay, nothing to the scale of an elite group of people who throw this in your face. So Hoover got scandaled a little bit, but you had to dig to find that, you know? So Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon, you know, they screwed up a bit, but you had to dig to find that. You've got a man in Washington, D.C. now who flaunts in your face the fact that he took $500 billion and just handed it over to his buddies who were running a business that they built for no other purpose than to soak you for $500 billion. He handed it over to them knowing that 6 weeks after he handed it over to them, they were going to close the front door, take your $500 billion home with them, and call it quits. And he flaunts that in your face. So in 3 years, we have gone from a quasi-democratic republic teetering on socialism to a hard socialist economy teetering on fascism. And some would say that we are even at that fascist point. We are certainly nearing with over 100 bureaucratic edicts, new regulations a day coming out of Washington, D.C. We are certainly nearing the point of totalitarianism in Washington, D.C. This chronically evil character has got to go. And one of the reasons is because of this.
So I'm going to reduce the deficit in a balanced way. We've already made $1 trillion worth of cuts. We can make another trillion or trillion two. And what we then do is ask for the wealthy to pay a little bit more.
Now listen. I want to, for the good of the country and for the good of Missouri, to always keep these two people tied together at the hip like Siamese twins.
Just one more. I just want to know if the Senate's going to pass a budget anytime soon.
The Senate passed a budget last August. In fact, we did better. I've always complained about the way we did these budget resolutions because they're phony baloney. Every year we pass a resolution and it doesn't even have force of law. And the appropriators would have just completely ignored it. So last August, for the first time that I've been there, we put it into law for 2 years, the budget for 2 years, and actually 10 years going forward, but legal spending caps for 2 years. And guess what happened this year? The appropriators followed it. For the first time...
Okay. There is a woman who is representing you in Washington, D.C., who has her... I want to stay civil here. Who has her... her ties to President Obama so tight that you could barely pry them apart with a crowbar. And this woman either is stupid enough to believe that they passed a budget, that the president signed it into law, that they cut federal spending, and that they reduced the size of federal government. We passed a budget, the president signed it last August, the president signed it, we put it into law, the appropriators followed it, we cut federal spending, and we cut the size of the federal government. Now, one of two things is going on here. This woman is so stupid, so absent every day she's sitting in that chamber, that she really believes this, or... she believes that you are so stupid, she can sell that to you. I mean, there isn't anyone out there, farthest left progressive in the country, to the farthest right conservative in the country, who doesn't know for a fact that we have not passed a budget in 3.5 years. In over 1,000 days. And here is a woman who tells you that last August they passed a budget, the president signed it into law, which means not we had a budget plan in the Senate, they had a budget plan in the House. We reconciled a budget because it went to the president and he signed it into law. We came up together with a budget that went to the president and he signed that budget into law. And then the appropriators followed that budget as if that ever happened when we had a budget. And then they cut federal spending as if that has happened in the last decade and a half. And they reduced the size of federal government as though that has happened in your lifetime in any given 12 months. Here is a woman that brothers and sisters has to go. I mean, I have my favorite in the three-way race to run against this lady, and I'm actually teetering on the edge of changing favorites right now as we speak. I'm going to tell you that. But I'm going to have a favorite. But I'm going to tell you right now that in Romney fashion, I'm going to vote for Joe the Plumber, if he's running against Claire McCaskill, because this woman is either chronically stupid or chronically as evil as her chronically evil twin up there in the White House. She either is chronically stupid in that she may actually believe that they passed a budget in August. The president signed it into law. The appropriators followed, and they cut spending. And there is six lies in one damn sentence. Six lies in one sentence. Or she knows better, and she really thinks that the voters, this many years later, with this turning tide, in this day and time, with all of the media that we have at our disposal, are stupid enough to buy six lies in one sentence just because she says so. Take your pick. She's got to go. Okay, I want to take a quick break. I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about some things we got coming up really quickly, and then we're going to get out of here for you.
I will be held accountable. I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're close to the end here tonight. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio. Tune in tomorrow night for the MGC Roundtable. I know Lisa will be here. I think Vaughn will be here. We're going to bring Brian Hook along. I don't know if you've been following a significant tiff that's been going on between Brian Hook and would-be speaker Tim Jones. I'd love to have Tim along, too. If Tim wants to come along, we'll send out the invitation. I don't know if we've done that or not. We need to do that. But there's a little bit of back and forth going on there as to we have a politician who says, I cut spending, and we have a budget watchdog that says, you need to define what you mean when you say cut spending, because you actually spent more money than you did last year. Jones has a reasonable explanation for what he means when he says I cut spending. My stand is it's a little disingenuous to say you cut spending when you spent more money than you did last year. I'd love to hear that debate live between these two guys, and so we will make sure Brian is going to be here. We'll see if we can't get Tim along, and if we can. Monday and Thursday is me, the Hour of Truth. I don't know that we have anyone for Monday, but for Thursday of next... I did do an interview with Todd Akin today. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about this Todd Akin interview, okay? I have been exceptionally critical of Todd Akin. I've been exceptionally critical of Todd Akin on the... Debt ceiling. I've been extremely critical of Todd Akin on the NDAA. I've been extremely critical of Todd Akin on the Patriot Act. This is no secret to Todd Akin, and I want to tell you, whether you support him or not, whether I support him or not, whatever happens in the end, I have the utmost respect for this guy. He came on our show. It was a taped interview. You'll hear it Monday. He's coming on our show. He's doing an interview knowing full well that I have been critical of him. Now, I did promise him, and I kept my promise. I'm going to be fair. You're just going to come on. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to play point counterpoint with you. I'm going to ask you to explain these votes. I expect you to do that. And he did it. He did it. He came on here. He gave us an explanation for his vote. And I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something. He may have won me over. He may have won me over in a 30-minute interview this morning. I'm hard on people. I say it the way I see it. And maybe because of that, Brunner won't come on here and talk to me. Brunner will not come on this show. And so I may be a convert. I may be a convert after today's discussion. We'll play that tape on Monday night. On Tuesday night, Von Karaker comes along, Show Me Common Sense. And on Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager with the Culture Vigilante. We'll talk a little bit more about those tomorrow because I've spent too much time with Todd Akin tonight. I wouldn't take it back for anything in the world. It was fun time. It was great time. I love Todd Akin. This is a guy you need to study. This is a guy you need to follow. Well, hell, this is a guy you need to vote for. It just really is that simple. We thank Todd for coming along. Get out there on August the 7th and vote. We'll talk to you tomorrow night on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Roundtable. And that's a wrap for Thursday, Hour of Truth. I'm Dave.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Turn out the lights.